You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live during this wonderful Autism Awareness Month. You know, we talk about the three A's during Autism Awareness, acceptance, and action, all three together so that we can actually get somewhere. So happy to be here with you this morning because we've got a great guest for you today. Like one of the best guests of all time is joining us again today. Of course, I'm talking about Julie Matthews, who nobody knows more about nutrition and autism than Julie Matthews, and she's a real trailblazer. And if you could be somebody who's already doing a dietary intervention, believe me, she's going to share information with you during this hour that's going to make your head go poof. Right? Or it could be that you just haven't even looked at diet yet because it's so overwhelming to you and you're like, I don't know. And we like our gluten, in our pastry puffs every morning that we put in the toaster. I really like those and I want to keep having those for breakfast. Right? You might be in that camp. It's okay. We love you still. It's all right. But you might want to listen to what Julie has to say because sometimes, you know, changing the diet is the thing that helps progress flourish. And she's got some really important information about what works and how it works and what it works on. So you're going to want to stick around for that. Want to let you know that we pre-recorded this show because we wanted to be able to take fabulous time with Julie. But you can still be writing in and commenting during the show. I'm watching right along with you. So you can definitely be asking questions. Any question you have specific for Julie, I will make sure that I forward to her. And so if you want to include an email, I will forward that to her. But we're live right now, live recorded, you know what I mean, on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Our fabulous Chris Desmond is showing you some of the different places where we're live right now. Don't forget that this show is available as a free podcast, and it's because we pre-taped it, it will be available as we're airing this. So if you want to take this in the car and listen only, you absolutely can. And you can listen to it again and again because you may want to, because some of the information is that level of good. You know what I'm saying? Excuse me as I choke. Pardon me. We're going to get to Julie in just a few minutes. I want to give you guys a couple of things that I want you to know, and then we're going to do Jargon of the Day, and then it's Julie, right? But first of all, no matter how you're watching us, you might be watching us on our YouTube channel, you might be watching us on our Facebook pages, or you might be listening in podcast, we bring that information to you free of charge because it's important to us that you have access to it. That's what we've been doing. We're in our 14th year, and we bust our keisters to make sure that we don't have to charge you guys anything. So you will notice when you download the podcast that there are advertisements. We hope that you will not be fatutzed with that and that you will embrace that because that's there so that you don't have to pay. Now, if you are somebody who's like, but I really like my podcast ad-free, I would be willing, and I have money in my couch cushions that I can spend on this, how can I do that? That's very simple. We made that possible for you. You can go to Glow. That's glow.fm/autismlive. When you go there, it's $5 a month unless you want to buy it across a year, and then it's even less than that. And when you do that, here's the fun thing. You will automatically, anytime we do a new show, whether it's anything on the Autism Network, anything at all on the Autism Network, whether it's Autism Live, Stories from the Spectrum, our newer shows, today's Hyperfixation, or Autismo y Comunidad, or Ask Dr. Doreen, which is its own podcast now. But if you subscribe to us on glow.fm, you get the whole Megillah, the whole schlemuel you get for that low cost. And it means that you have helped us defray the cost. And so you get it without the ads if you'd like to do that. So that's available for you. But please, I also encourage you to check us out on YouTube, because then you get to see the audio and the picture, which, you know, sometimes is fun. I know that there are some of you out there that for the jargon of the day, your teacher assigns it, and the way that they make sure that you have done your homework and listened to the jargon of the day is by talking about what my crazy hair looked like with that definition. I love that. I can't even tell you how much I enjoy that my nutty hair helps all of you to learn jargon. It works for me, I have to say. So I think of that sometimes when I get ready to shave my head. I'm like, it's all good. This will add more to it. So I think maybe now I need to be exploring different colors at this point, right? Instead of just the white. Maybe rainbow? I don't know. I've done the orange swatch, if you've been watching the jargon. My hair, when we started, was dark brown. So I don't know. I don't know at this point. Maybe I need to start bringing in the wigs. I've done that before, too. All right. I digress. Let's talk about jargon. And because we're having Julie Matthews on today, we thought that this term might come up. And we've never done the jargon for this before. And yet, it's a pretty important thing to know so that if somebody talks to you about this, that you know what it is you're talking about. Our jargon term today is dysbiosis. Yes, say that 5 times fast. Dysbiosis. And you know, if you're around for the jargon, that first we give you an actual definition, and often I make fun of it because it's filled with terms that aren't accessible, that you'd need 3 dictionaries to figure out what the definition is, and then we go to a working definition, which hopefully we try to encompass why this thing is important to you now and today, which is really what today's jargon term is about. So dysbiosis, let's take a look at our actual definition, which comes to us from the National Institutes of Health.gov. Yes, it's that kind of a diagnosis. So dysbiosis is defined by an imbalance in bacterial composition, changes in bacterial metabolic activities, or changes in bacterial distribution within the gut. Ooh, now we're talking about serious things. The 3 types of dysbiosis are 1, loss of beneficial bacteria, 2, overgrowth of potentially pathogenic bacteria, and 3, loss of overall bacterial diversity. Ooh, there's some information there, but I'm a little scared right now. Because I don't know exactly what we're talking about, but now we're talking about things that are pretty important, right? But I want to move on to our actual definition, but I want to take some of this with us as we move to the working definition, that this is an imbalance in the bacterial composition, right? But dysbiosis, and this is the part we want to take away from it, it's a condition that can lead to many different types of disorders, including IBD, IBS, celiac disease, allergies, asthma, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, and obesity. Okay, those are just some of the things that can be that dysbiosis can lead to. But we're talking about a bacterial imbalance in your digestive tract. Now, I'm not a scientist. And we've got Julie Matthews coming in just a few minutes, and she's the expert really on this. But what I want us all to recognize is that we all have this ecosystem. The digestive tract is an amazing feat of technology. Whatever your beliefs are about how we came to be on this planet, the fact that we all have a digestive tract and that it works is, I mean, the stuff of universes, it's just crazy when you think about all the different things from chewing with your teeth to swallowing and all the different chemical reactions something has to do before you urinate or poo something out. It's kind of amazing. It is flat out amazing. And yet we see more people and around the world having more issues with their digestive tract than ever before. So what are we missing? And I know Dr. Grant Pichet talks a lot on her show about our food supply and what's in our food supply and what are we ingesting while we're ingesting food? Because that gut biome is, you know, there's a saying that says happy gut, happy life, right? I know some people go happy wife, happy life, but the original one was happy gut, happy life, right? That if your gut is not happy, your life is not happy. And I want you to think about that, not just for yourself, but also for your child or the teen or the adult that you love on the spectrum. And we see symptoms all the time of dysbiosis where that it's clear that the bacterial thing is out of whack. And it can happen very easily, right? That, you know, it could be that your child was on an antibiotic. And that took that, and antibiotics are great. Antibiotics are wonderful, saved millions of lives, right? But if the balance of your flora and fauna and the way things, you know, because you have good bacteria and bad bacteria in there, and if the balance gets off, man, it's Katie bar the door. So I wanted us to talk about this because it's important to not just let people glide over it. Dysbiosis is not pleasant, and we want to constantly be making sure that whatever we're doing, we're preserving that biome and making sure that the system works properly. Now, that looks different for everybody, and Julia is for sure going to talk about that. But I think all too often, if your kiddo is having diarrhea, I've heard this way too much in my life, where the kiddo is having diarrhea. And I know, I went to a doctor and said, my kiddo has diarrhea every day. Isn't there like some time and some place where he's going to have like a regular poo? And I remember he had already had a diagnosis by that point. And that doctor said, no, he has autism. He's going to have diarrhea. We didn't stay with that doctor, right? And we didn't stay with that answer because it was wrong. But I want, you know, I only knew that it was wrong because people were telling me that that was wrong. And I want you to know that if your child is having gut issues or you sense that there's something isn't right digestively, that it's absolutely become something that you become willing to work on so that they can have a better life. That's really, and if that's not enough for you, look at all the things that it can lead to. You know, none of us wants to look our child or teen or adult in the eyes and go, oh, I hope that you have IBD, IBS, celiac disease, allergies, asthma, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, or that you grow up to be obese. No parent ever said that. So let's not say that now. Let's make sure that if your child, if you're having symptoms of dysbiosis, even if it doesn't qualify for the full diagnosis of dysbiosis, if your kiddo is having digestive issues, let's get it treated. And if you don't find that from the first doctor, well, I've got somebody for you today that you could reach out to and see what you can do just with diet to turn this around, because that's a really important part of it. So take one more look at this working definition. If this doesn't motivate you, I don't know what would. Let's make sure that all of our kids get treated if they're having any kind of a gut issue. It's important. Our guest today is one of the most amazing people and certainly one of the people I would listen to if she broke out into hives at this definition. I'm talking about, of course, the fantastic Julie Matthews. She is an MSNC, a certified nutrition consultant. She has her master's degree in medical nutrition with distinction, from Arizona State University. She is the author of the book that so many of us are, you know, consider to be pivotal. It is an award-winning book called Nourishing Hope for Autism. So important. And we're going to be talking with her specifically about how what you eat or what your child eats plays a direct role in all areas of their life, and that autism would, of course, not be separate from that as well. She is also the co-author of the study that proved the efficacy of nutrition and dietary intervention for autism. You can find that published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrients. Julie also has a new study that came out last fall that I'm ashamed of myself that we have not had her in to talk about it before, but it's going to make all of your heads go, it's so exciting. Her work is based on the bio-individual nutrition approach. This takes each person into consideration, their unique individual needs. And why am I talking about this? Let's get her in to talk about it and define it. But Julie, we're so impressed with you.
Thank you.
You are just such a light on this planet and have been such a light for so many people in the autism community. I think you're a little bit like Dr. Grampiche in that there is a painting underneath a bed somewhere that's aging for you. Either that or you were 12 when I started listening to you about what to do, of how to feed my child. Because honestly, I can't, you look like you're 22 now, so that doesn't make sense in my brain. But maybe this is the example of what clean eating can be, you guys. Look at how great she looks. Okay. And I have been listening to her, you guys, for at least like 17 years. Let's start there. How long have you been doing this, Julie? Because it's been a hot minute. How long have you been working on nutrition in conjunction with autism and other types of, I don't want to say all illnesses because they're disorders and illnesses. How long have you been working on this?
Over 20 years, maybe 21, 22 years at this point.
Yeah. So you started when you were 3. now we're clear. And I have to ask this question. I don't know if I've ever asked you this before, but why was nutrition the thing? And what was the thing that tipped you towards autism and nutrition?
That's a really great question. So I decided that I wanted to figure out how I could help people. I was working in the corporate world doing something completely unrelated. And I thought, you know, I really want to help people with their health. And I thought of all the different modalities and thought, you know, food and nutrition is really the foundation of all of it. So I wanted to start there. So that's what I decided to pursue. And as you would imagine, these things happen in the world. When I first started, I thought, you know, I really want to understand why kids are having all of these challenges. I happened to be like jogging around a field and there was a kids festival going on, and it was filled with like pizza and donuts and all this junk food. And I thought, this has something to do with what's going on with ADHD. And so I decided to do my paper my first year on ADHD, and I met a man who I wanted to interview for that. Well, it turned out he had recovered his kids from autism. And so we talked about ADHD for about 15 minutes. And then we talked about the 1 hour conversation turned into a 3 hour conversation all about autism, the gluten-free, casein-free diet, sulfation, glutathione, all these things, and how these kids really were having challenges and really needed help. And there weren't that many people doing this and they needed more people. And that was pretty much the whole thing. That was, if you knew him, that was Michael Lang back when he was around. Fortunately, he did pass away of pancreatic cancer a number of years ago. But he is what started me on this path. And I have been passionate about it ever since.
Yeah, passionate about and leading the charge, especially when you started out. It was a time when people were still saying that autism was not treatable, and that progress could not be expected because, I mean, insurance wasn't covering any autism treatments. And certainly the whole nutrition piece, I remember a doctor just laughing in my face and saying, my dear, your child's autism has nothing to do with what he's ingesting. Just laughing at me. Oh. And of course, we didn't go to him anymore. But I remember thinking just logically that if I, you know, I am my own little ecosystem. And if I eat something and I happen to be allergic to milk, and if I eat milk, how I behave and how I learn changes. It just does. And I experience the world in a much different way than if I didn't eat milk. And this made sense to me. So I didn't listen to that doctor. But for decades, people were saying, you know, oh, all you wackanoodle moms who think that if you change your child's diet, that it's going to change how they behave, that it, I mean, and people in very high places were saying this. Now, you have been at the forefront of identifying that the crazy notion that what you eat affects how you feel, and that Absolutely. That includes individuals with autism.
Yes, and actually your experience is exactly what I experienced. And I guess maybe that's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about the science, and I love reading the science and talking about the science and doing research, all of those things, because I was told the same thing by family friends who were pediatricians and all sorts of people. And I knew also, like you, that it wasn't true because of what you see and hear from parents all the time. So I guess it makes me particularly passionate about sharing what I have seen.
Yeah. I hate it when people try to gaslight us with things that just make total sense. If I were going to sit down and drink a glass of beer, how I behaved would change immediately afterwards. And that would be different than somebody else who has a different tolerance level than me. So I just like to say to doctors, don't gaslight me. Of course, nutrition plays a role in everything. Every study keeps pointing that to that. Why are you guys so slow on the uptake here? But you were not. You were really at the forefront and pushing. Now, I want to take just a second to talk about this, the thing that you did that proved the efficacy of nutrition and dietary intervention for autism that is in that peer reviewed journal Nutrients. Tell us a little bit about what you did and what's in that article.
Yeah, so it was a randomized controlled trial. So we looked at 6 nutritional and dietary interventions, one stacked upon each other about once a month, spread out over about 6 or 7 months, and then followed for a year. And so those were a multivitamin mineral formula, an essential fatty acid formula with fish oil. We looked at Epsom salt baths, carnitine, digestive enzymes, and a healthy gluten-free, casein-free, and soy-free diet. And we found an almost 7-point improvement in nonverbal IQ. We found 4.5 times the developmental age improvement. We found improvements in mood, behavior, hyperactivity, language, sleep, digestive conditions, all sorts of different things. So it was, I think, a really profound study, in part because it showed the way dietary intervention is actually done in real life. So, you know, usually a study is we take one thing and we follow that one thing and we see what changes. Mm-hmm. A family is not going to try vitamin C for a year and then see what happens and then go on to, you know, vitamin E or go on to B6 or something. And also nutrients, they work in concert. So they work together.
Yeah.
And people do diet and nutrient changes at the same time as well. So the great thing about the study, I think, is that it looked at real life and how practitioners and families typically introduce diet and nutrition intervention, which is a little bit step by step, kind of one by one, but together over the course of time.
I love the fact that you staggered it a little bit. Talk a little bit about why you would do that, why you would do one thing for 1 month and then add another thing to it.
Yes, because for, I think, a couple of reasons. One, at least the reason we do that in practice is because then you can see if the thing is helping or causing symptoms. And you can see what is improving. So you not only know that, you can get a sense of, is this something that I might like to continue for a while because I saw something good? And then if you did everything all at once and you saw any positive or negative reaction, you wouldn't know what it was that was creating that. And so this way you have a better sense of what is helping.
Yeah. I've seen it all too many times where a parent gets so excited because they hear about the results that you had. And I think we all want to sign up for that, right? But remember this sort of step up method, because sometimes your kiddo will have a reaction to something. The thing that, you know, because we did something similar, that we would try something for 30 days and then add the next thing. And I remember when we added, it was a fish oil that we added, and for whatever reason, my son couldn't handle it. He and we saw a regression in eye, like he would look at things out of the corner of his eye, and it had gotten better. And once he was on the fish oil, forget it. He looked at everything out the corner of his eye. And our doctor at the time said, I'm so glad we did this the way we did. We took him off of that, put something else in, and that symptom, you know, went back to the improvement that we had had. But if we had just thrown everything, we could have spent 6 months trying to figure out what the thing was. And it's very valuable to do exactly what Julie is saying. But to see that much of an improvement, it sent a message to the world, this isn't poppycock. This is this is actually helping to support. I always like to say that, you know, it's so funny because we have camps. And people like to get in their camp and say that they're in their camp. And we have people that are in the biomedical camp, and I just love them. And they see the benefits. They aren't always the ABA people. And then we have people that are ABA people who are like, no, we're doing ABA, we're not doing biomedical, because there was a period of time when the ABA community was saying, oh, we don't believe in the biomedical, like I don't, like they don't believe in Santa Claus. It's maddening. But the truth of the matter is whatever intervention you are using, when you combine it with things so that your child feels better, it's whether you choose ABA or you choose floor time or whatever your methodology is, you're doing Denver Early Start, whatever it is, if your child feels better, they're going to do better.
And definitely. How many times have you had a headache or you had a something going on with your you know gut? How much could you focus and how sharp could you be in those moments? Probably not very much. And so if that's happening all the time and you can't really express what it is, it's going to affect your ability to pay attention and be your sharpest.
Well, and just from a parent point of view or a caregiver point of view, we're always talking about how we want to be the best possible ally to our children, teens, and adults that we love on the autism spectrum. So we don't want them to go around having chronic diarrhea. We don't want them to go around and constantly be feeling, you know, this upset stomach. We don't want them to have that low-grade headache in the back of their... None of us would wish that for our children.
Right.
So important that we... Because a lot of people don't treat our kids. As you know, Julie, you go to a regular pediatrician, or heaven forbid, you got to go to urgent care or the emergency room, and you say the word autism, and suddenly everybody stands back and puts their hands up. Mm-hmm. It's not everybody. I'm speaking hyperbolically, but too often we're seeing that they don't know, and so their decision is to do less. Mm-hmm. And we need to be well-informed advocates and pushing forward for our children so that they can feel well on all levels. So I love this. So that study came out and really kind of put a lot of things on its ear. And we see a lot more people who are much more open to biomedical and dietary interventions. But then you took it to the next level, lady. So talk about this new study that came out last fall, correct?
Yes. I'm very excited about that one. That came out in the Journal of Personalized Medicine. And it was a survey study that we did on 818 caregivers and individuals with autism. So it's caregivers of individuals with autism, which made up a vast majority, and then some individuals with high-functioning autism that could fill out the forms themselves. And we looked at 13 different therapeutic diets, and not only whether they had an overall benefit, but if they had any adverse effects, and what the symptom improvements and adverse effects were. So it was a very exciting study. So there was good benefit from doing the diet and very, very low adverse effects from doing the diet. And we looked at them, like I said, as a whole. We looked at them individually. We looked at individual symptom improvements between them. We found out that different diets improved different symptoms. So some diets were better at helping improve certain symptoms than others. Overall, there was a rating scale of 0 to 4, and it was a 2.36 for all the diets on average. And so that was between a moderate to good benefit. And we actually did this survey on nutraceuticals, so supplements, as well as psychiatric and seizure medications. And diets actually, interestingly, did statistically significantly better than both of those others individually, and had a significantly lower amount of adverse effects than the psychiatric and seizure medications did. So the diets performed very, very well.
Pretty amazing. Can we go through what the 13 different diets? By the way, before I get really into the weeds here on this, I want you guys to know that if you visit Julie's website, if you go to nourishinghope.com, there's a bunch of things that you will find there, amazing resources. You can be looking there to see all the places that Julie's going to be speaking throughout this amazing month, and things that she has in the hopper. So go to nourishinghope.com. You can also go to nourishinghope.com and put /programs, and you'll find out a bunch more information that's there. I know that, you know, there's the potential for, I believe you've got some specials going on during this month. So for things that you guys might want to participate in. But I also want to say that on your website, there is a place where you can opt in. You put in your email, and what you're saying is, Julie, I'd like to get more information from you on a regular basis. And the first thing that you're going to get is a free report that is titled What the Science Says. And I know people that, you know, parents that are in the middle of interventions right now, they're busy people that have gotten this and have said, oh my gosh, this is so helpful to me in terms of making decisions about what I'm doing right now. So much of the research that we hear about is like, oh, well, we're looking at this to see what it does, and this might help us in 10 years. And everybody's saying to me, no, this is like really helpful to me today. So a lot of the things that we're talking about and links to the studies and things of that nature, you're going to find everything that you want to find at nourishinghope.com. But don't forget to go to /programs.
/program without the S.
One program. /program. Okay, and then you'll see potentially some discounts, which we always love that. I love a discount. Okay, so let's talk about what the 13 dietary interventions were that you were looking at, and then maybe whatever you can remember, because it's so, there's so many things, it's so comprehensive, you guys, but some of the different areas, a symptom areas that you were looking at to see improvement. But let's start with the diets, if you don't mind.
Sure.
I'm going to count on my fingers.
So there was the healthy diet, and a healthy diet was defined as a diet high in vegetables and fruits and protein and low in junk food. The Feingold diet, a food avoidance diet based on IgG and IgE testing. A low sugar diet, the gluten-free and casein-free diet, food avoidance diet based on observation, corn-free diet, specific carbohydrate diet, a casein-free diet alone, a gluten-free diet alone, a soy-free diet alone, a paleo diet, and ketogenic diet.
Okay. I counted 13. You did very well. 13 things is hard to remember. Okay, so all of those diets, which you guys have heard different people on our show over the years talk about each and every one of those, right? But then you started looking at just overall what helped, but then you got granular with it and said, let's look at some specific symptoms that we might be looking to alleviate. What kinds of symptoms, and you don't have to give them all, but let's hit some of the highlights here, things that you were looking at.
Sure. So we looked at, if you take all the diets as a whole and you look at the highest percentage of individuals that improved from diets as a whole, the first was attention, cognition, irritability, health, hyperactivity, aggression, anxiety. We looked at constipation, diarrhea, language, and then there were about 23 or 24 symptoms total.
Amazing. And already from that hit parade, I can hear everybody's head exploding, going, what? This is amazing. Like, these kinds of things are things that you could move the dial on based on what your child ingests. Yes, this is what Julie does. So from that hit parade, let's just talk about one or two, because a lot of people write into us about the anxiety piece. That anxiety is something that a lot of us in general are dealing with, but a lot of our kiddos on the spectrum are dealing with anxiety, and there are many things that you can do to help your child, but we just can't have this expectation that it's just going to, you know, you just say calm down and they're going to be calmer, right? Mm-hmm. Because that wouldn't work with me. Why would it work with our kiddos on the spectrum?
Exactly.
Right? So we wouldn't expect that. But that there's a different effect with different diets. This was a shocker for me. Do we want to go through what the top five were for anxiety?
Sure. Okay. So, and again, when I say the top diet was X, that doesn't mean that that diet is the best diet for everybody. Some diets are more restrictive than other diets, and it might be the second or the third diet on the list that might be a better fit for certain individuals. But I will, you know, give you the scoop. So the number one diet for anxiety was the ketogenic diet, with 33% of individuals that did that diet having improvement in anxiety.
Which is so, this stopped me in my tracks. This just stopped me in my tracks, because so much of the time when we talk about on the show the ketogenic diet, it is, we're talking about seizures. That the part of the community that I know that is the most, you know, supportive of a ketogenic diet are families where the kiddo is having seizures, and I've seen people have miraculous results with a seizure diet, with a keto diet for seizures. I had never heard anybody talk about it for anxiety, but now it's on my radar. This is fascinating. But as you said, that doesn't mean that you necessarily need to run out and do a ketogenic diet, but you know, let's go over what some of the other ones are to help that showed a difference in anxiety. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So the second was the Feingold diet. And there was 28% there. So again, a large percentage of those people as well. And the next was a specific carbohydrate diet, then a low sugar diet, and a food avoidance diet based on observation. So the first two were 28 and 33%. The others ranged from like 16 to 19%. So those first two, you know, shined a little above the rest.
And where's GFCF on anxiety?
Interesting. Let's look. I'm looking at my paper right now.
Because that's the diet that most of us talk about first, right?
Yes. And it's a great diet. 15% of individuals improve their anxiety with the GFCF diet.
Okay. Now I want to go back and talk a little bit about Feingold and specific carbohydrate, because when my son was young, these were two diets who were at the forefront of every conversation. If I was talking to anybody about a diet having to do with autism, certainly gluten-free, casein-free would come up, but probably after Feingold and specific carbohydrate. And we did a modified Feingold, like where we didn't follow it to the T, and we did the specific carbohydrate for like a month and a half. So they're not unfamiliar to me, but I'm guessing that a lot of you have never even heard about them. So tell us a little bit about the principles of the Feingold diet.
So a Feingold diet is a diet that's free in artificial additives, and it's also low in a naturally occurring food compound called salicylates. And back in the 1970s, Dr. Ben Feingold realized that these compounds were creating hyperactivity as well as other symptoms in the individuals, in his patients. So this diet's been around for a long time. The salicylate-rich foods, unfortunately, are some very good foods. So again, you have to figure out if they're causing a challenge for your child. But it was one of the highest performing diets, slicing it in the data on multiple different ways. So those are foods like tomato sauce and ketchup, grapes and apples and berries, spices, things like that. Again, you know, they're really healthy foods and high in nutrients, but if you're not able to process them, then they can create a lot of challenges with behavior. And if we look at the study and we look at the Feingold diet, 45% of individuals who did that diet improved hyperactivity. It's just, I think almost half of them improved hyperactivity from that diet. 38% improved irritability, 37% improved attention, 34% improved aggression, 28%, as we said, improved anxiety, 28% cognition. So it performed very well. And actually, it is a diet that I think there's a variety of different low salicylate diets that are out there. In my program, I kind of talk about the best of all the different principles, kind of merge them all, try to bring them all together into one set of principles, because it can get a little confusing. The food lists are a little bit different from here and there. But generally speaking, that's, so whether you call it a low salicylate diet or a Feingold diet, it's more or less the same principles.
And I got to be honest with you, because I said we did a modified because we didn't do it religiously. And I like to make sure that I admit to that. But what we did do religiously was that there were no artificial colors or flavors in my son's diet. And then we took out the things like apples, and there was no applesauce. And let me tell you, I had a problem that day when I was like, how are we going to live without applesauce? And there was no grapes or raisins. And there was something else that you said that I was like, oh, that was a really hard one. And we did that for, I mean, we did the no artificial colors for over a decade. And we still try to stay true to that, because I don't think anybody does well with all the artificial colors and flavors. But the salicylate, we probably did for a year and a half, 2 years. And as I said, we weren't religious about it, but we also didn't have a problem with hyperactivity. And we didn't have a problem with attention and focus once we did this, I have to say. I would love to know, if you ever do this again, I would love, like you, how you separated it for the gluten casein free, I would love to separate the artificial colors and flavors and the salicylates and see.
Yes.
I think that would be interesting. But
yes.
Everybody today can say, okay, I'm not doing artificial colors and flavors anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be an easy thing to chuck, because even you can go to Target and get your Easter candy and get it with no artificial colors and flavors. They have a whole little section where you know. So I'm just saying, you could chuck that. It will be slightly difficult, but not as difficult as you think it will be. Everything is out on the market now, because more and more people are going, what is this crap and junk I'm putting in my child's body? Okay, but now let's talk about specific carbohydrate, because that's a whole other kettle of fish.
It is. So the specific carbohydrate diet is a diet that was created actually in before the 1930s, because it was becoming fairly popular in the 1930s and 1940s when Dr. Sidney Haas wrote some papers on the use of this diet in children with a variety of digestive disorders and things like that. And this diet is no grains, no starches like potatoes and corn, no sugars, table sugar, you know, those kinds of things. Now, you could do naturally occurring fruit sugar, things like that. So you can do vegetable, non-starchy vegetables, fruits, whole fruits, if you aren't allergic, nuts and seeds and protein and meat and eggs and oils and all that good stuff. But it eliminates those types of carbohydrates. That's why it's called specific carbohydrates. So it's not a low carbohydrate diet like the ketogenic diet. It's specific carbohydrates that tend to feed bacteria and things that can create dysbiosis. We'll use our word of the day.
Yes.
And then that dysbiosis can contribute to challenges with the gut, digesting foods properly, can create an overgrowth of certain bacteria, that dysbiosis. And then that can further the cycle that creates an a difficulty breaking down those foods, and then instead it becomes food for those organisms, and you get this cycle of challenges with digestion. And what we know is that the gut and the brain are connected. So in, I want to say I met Elaine Gottschall maybe in 2004, 2005. She started coming to the autism conferences and saying, hey, what I was doing to help my daughter with her gut stuff, there's a lot of things going on in autism related to the gut, and I want to share this diet that's really helpful for the gut. And so that's what happened. And then Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride, who's a doctor, used this diet for her son with autism and then created the GAPS diet, which is sort of an offshoot of the specific carbohydrate diet. So it's now been used for 20 years, and I can't believe it. I remember when I first found out about this diet. And so the diet helps, definitely is used a lot with people with gut symptoms, but it also, since the gut and the brain are connected, there's also some good information on how it can help other symptoms. So if we look at that diet, and we see that the there's also this category of general benefit, which I've kind of been leaving out to get to some more of the specific symptoms, but 57% said they found general benefit with it, 24% in attention, 22% with cognition, 19% with anxiety, 19% with diarrhea, and then from there, other things as well. So you can see even some of the first symptoms were more neurological or cognitive related.
So already I'm sure our audience is seeing that there is overlap, that, you know, you could be on the specific carbohydrate diet, but there is some overlap with, say, for instance, the gluten-free, casein-free, because if you're not having gluten, that takes out a bunch of the specific, not all, right, but some of the specific carbohydrates. If you're on the ketogenic, it's taking out some of that, but slightly different. There's nuance to all of this. Mm-hmm. And I love what you've done, because it shows you if there's something that you're specifically targeting, that it shows you which direction you might go in and which direction you might start in. But it's very quickly, it's very easy for a parent to get overwhelmed by diet and go, we used to do a segment on the show. We still have them recorded that we called What's Left, where it was a cooking segment where we would show, you know, that you could make things, because people would ask me all the time, if you're doing all that, what is it your child is eating? And yet when they would see my child eat, they would go, I've never seen a child eat carrots and snow peas the way your child does. How did you make that magic trick happen? So for people that are overwhelmed, you've got some really good help for them, Julie. Talk a little bit about, I know other thing, it's slash program, but you have programs. Tell them about what you do to help people get through the weeds of this.
Yes, so I have created a number of things. There's all sorts of free resources and guides. I've got books, I've got ebooks, I've got, like you said, a variety of different programs. What I would call kind of my core program is a 12-step process to help people that are, those that are both brand new and those that have been in this for years and have, quote, done everything, create a methodical step-by-step process on how you would look at all of these individual things and help create a personalized nutrition plan that's going to be best for them. So starting with simple things like take out the artificial ingredients and then add good healthy things, and then what might you want to take out, and exploring a bunch of these different special diets. I explore some that they don't explore in the survey. We look at a whole bunch of different ones, kind of what are the common symptoms, what are some of the common things that are improved with them. And what's interesting is that my clinical experience is very similar to what the survey said, which is really nice, and what the research shows. So I feel like they all have there's a big body of knowledge and there's a lot of consistency, which I think is great. And so what I help people do is to take some of the confusion out and help walk them through a step-by-step process, no matter where they happen to be in the process, to give them a sense of the different principles, diets, nutrients, supplements that they might want to look at, and a good kind of order to do it. I was just on a call with a really great colleague that does, functional genomics. And so very, very detailed on genetics and things like that. And he was saying, you know, even when you're looking at all these complex genetics, and if you have this and if you have that, but he said, but you know, if you do, you, it's not, doesn't really matter what you do, but the order you do it in. And that is true for this as well. So I like to help give people a really easy step-by-step guide, give them recommendations on some of my favorite products, places that I would typically start first with diet, things like that, to help people really take out some of the complication and confusion. As you said, it can get a bit overwhelming. And like you said, there's nuance to some of these things. And so how to figure out which one might be the best. That's what I try to help people do.
Well, and it's so wonderful to have an expert to wade into this land with you. We want to make sure that people know nourishinghope.com is the main website, but you also have another website called bioindividualnutrition.com, bioindividualnutrition.com, and I promised that we were going to have you talk about what that is. I suspect it's exactly what it sounds like, but talk to us about that.
Yes. So it's really my methodology on personalized nutrition, where I look at the biochemical individuality of the person and figure out what diet and nutrition things they need. It's really my practitioner program. I use a lot of this methodology in my parent program, but just in a more step-by-step form for parents. That's much more practical and hands-on with, you know, support calls and those kinds of things, versus the practitioner side, you know, we get much more into the details of all of it. So bioindividual nutrition is my methodology, and the Bioindividual Nutrition Institute and that website are for practitioners that want to learn how to use this with their clients.
Okay. But it is so important that we always talk about looking at the whole individual, and you know, it's very tempting to put people into categories and shove them into categories together. But we know that, I love, was it Stephen Shore or somebody who said it's not autism, it's autisms. Mm-hmm. That how it presents in each individual is in fact individual. So the dietary intervention, just like any other intervention, has to be specific to that individual. So I really recommend if people have the opportunity to work with you as they're doing some of these things, because I guarantee you, you're going to have questions along the way, and being able to have a mentor of the experience and knowledge that is Julie is going to really help you with getting to the best results the quickest, but also giving you peace of mind. When I think back to when we started giving my son that fish oil and he had that very negative reaction, if I hadn't had an expert to go to say, why is this happening? I don't know what I would have done. We might have taken him off of everything, right? Which would not have been helpful. So having somebody with experience to have their ear. Now, if I sign up for the caregivers through this program, and you said it's 12 steps, how many steps is it?
Yes.
12 steps. And can I work it at whatever pace? Is it part of a group? Tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, great question. You can work it at your own pace, and you can join us for our group sessions or not, depending on how you like to do things. We have a lot of flexibility. In fact, I go through this a lot, coming back and forth to what's the best way to do it. But I always feel that allowing parents to do it at their own pace, you have lifetime access to the material. Because I know that sometimes parents get really busy. We have one of our participants who's just a wonderful mom. She joined us on all the calls at the beginning, and then I didn't hear from her for, oh boy, it was probably a year and a half or 2 years. And then she popped up again just about a month or two ago. Turns out she's had two more babies in the meantime, which is why she was a bit busy at the time.
Wow.
So, you know, that it's always there for you to come back to whenever you want to.
Well, what an amazing thing that she had your information as she was pregnant and giving birth to those babies too, because I don't think it can be understated here, you guys. We've done shows on it before about finding that when you take a family and the family has decided, okay, we're going to do a dietary intervention for autism, it has an impact on the rest of the family that's often for the extreme betterment of the family. You know, it's very hard to have just one person in the family on a gluten-free, casein-free diet, for instance, let alone a ketogenic or whatever. You know, we have in our house, because my husband insists on having gluten because, you know, I don't know, he's my husband. And we love him just the way he is, but he is stuck on having his gluten bagel. We have a designated gluten-free toaster where he can toast his bagels. And if people come and visit, it has a big G on it because it's for the gluten, right? But that's, you know, that's hard. You can negotiate it. But a lot of times the family will say, okay, whatever the diet is, we're all going to give it a try-ski and see how it is. And we see that, you know, pregnant moms feel better, children are born healthier. There are studies to show this, you guys. And that there is a benefit for everybody from it. So kind of amazing. I know families that say, well, whatever I give my child in terms of biomedical, I'm going to take myself. I don't think that's the good idea, but I do think it's worthwhile to try the diet yourself to see, you know, if you're going to do a low sugar diet, you are going to have, I would guess, for most people, if you're having any amount of sugar, you're going to go through a period of time of die off where it's not going to feel great before you feel better. And knowing that and feeling it for yourself, you will be kinder and gentler to the child going through it and understand why you got to stick to it. And I've certainly tried a bunch of the diets. We actually, at one point, you'll love this. We had a team of ABA therapists who got so excited about our son's gluten-free, casein-free diet that for the month of April, they decided that they were going to go gluten-free, casein-free too, to see how it felt. And the crazy thing was that by the end of the month, one of the women went and got tested and she had celiac. It was life-changing for her to have tried that diet. And one of the other therapists, a gentleman, he said, well, I didn't test positive for celiac. He said, but it's like different. I see the world differently now. Like I was clearly cloudy before and somebody parted the curtains and he didn't have celiac. So,
Wonderful.
Right?
How wonderful. Yeah. Let's not, overlook GFCF because I know that we went into some of the other diets that people aren't as familiar with to talk about them. And just in that one anxiety, example we were looking at, it didn't quite come up on the top there. But it's a wonderful diet, and there are great improvements from it. Attention, cognition, communication, diarrhea, hyperactivity, social interaction, skin, health, irritability are all above 20% of the individuals improved with those. So it's a great diet. It is, I feel like it's kind of a foundational diet in that many of the other diets that you do also are going to be gluten-free, or dairy-free. So like the specific carbohydrate diet is gluten-free, the ketogenic diet is gluten-free and removes other things on top of that. A lot of the diets are also like paleo diet is dairy-free. So it's kind of a foundation for other diets as well. And there's lots of wonderful improvements. It's probably one of the two most studied diets in autism, and it does have, I think, really good results. So we don't want to overlook that. And I love that you did the diet. I love that you do it in your family and that you had the people that your son works with do the diet as well, because if you just go to my website, over to the program, you'll see there's actually a quote from a family and the mom improved these things and the dad improved in these ways and the daughter, the sibling improved in these ways. And so the whole family improved. I had one client that she did the diet. She lost like 75 pounds doing the diet. I have another client that really, lost excess weight from doing the diet, you know, things they didn't necessarily expect because they were doing it for their child. They got some really great results. So
yeah,
it was great to hear your examples on that.
It's amazing. So I want to just go over some of the resources. And of course, they'll all be in the notes underneath the link. But Julie's book, Nourishing Hope for Autism, is still available. You guys can get it on Amazon, or you can order it from her website, which is nourishinghope.com. If you go to nourishinghope.com, please enter your name in the opt-in. You'll get the wonderful report, What Science Says, but then you'll also get updates from Julie, so you'll be in the know. It will be worth the effort for having put your name in, which is not that much effort, can we say? And then check out her programs, and specifically check them out this month while there might be a discount. So go to nourishinghope.com/program, no S at the end. Julie, mm-hmm. You're absolutely amazing. Do I dare even ask you what's next on your agenda? What are you studying now?
I actually have a book coming out, but it's not coming out until Autism Awareness Month next year, so 2025.
Okay.
So that's what I'm diligently working on now. And then I don't know. We'll see where things go.
Okay. Well, I think what you're doing is remarkable, and I wish that more people would listen to you. And I hope that everybody who's listening today, it doesn't have to upset your whole life. You can start small, and Julie in her 12 steps helps you to do that. But I think what you'll find is when you make one little change and you see the benefit of it, then you just want to do more. Mm-hmm. Because why wouldn't we want our kids to feel better? Why wouldn't we want them to be able to learn more and to learn more in a more efficient way? And as you said, if we don't feel well, we don't learn as fast. We just don't. None of us do. So I hope that you will check Julie out in all of her splendiferousness and check out her programs by going to /program. One singular program for those of you listening in podcast. No S at the end of that. Julie, thank you so much for your very valuable time. And I hope people will be checking out on your website all the things you're going to be doing during this April. We call it the three A's. It's awareness, acceptance, and what's the third one? It's like I just had a brain bubble. Action. Oh, hello. Action, right? Because you can be aware, right? But if you haven't accepted people on the spectrum, awareness isn't going to get you far. And if you're not willing to take action, then you're not really an ally. So we want to be good allies. So thank you for being with us in this wonderful month. We so appreciate you.
Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to be here, and I'm here for anybody that needs anything. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Such an amazing, amazing resource, you guys. I really want to encourage you, check out her website and see if there is, because there's a bunch of summits that she's doing this month. And to get to hear her speak live, I want to just reiterate that, you know, she was one of the first people that we found that I was like, oh, somebody's making sense here. I hear the sense in what she's saying. And a lot of what she said directed what we did. And I feel like we made tremendous progress early on because we were doing good quality ABA, but we were taking care of that dietary piece as well. And it really made a difference. So visit her website, nourishinghope.com. Get her book, Nourishing Hope for Autism, and you can get that on that website, or you could order it from Amazon and probably have it be delivered tomorrow. Life-changing stuff. I love it because it empowered me as a parent that I could make choices and do things that were going to help my child at the dinner table. You know what they say, food is love, right? Well, I wanted to give the best love there was. And that meant something very specific for my child that didn't necessarily mean it for somebody else's child. So check it out for yourself. I hope that you will. That's all for today, you guys. But we will be back tomorrow with more show, more information, more inspiration. Thanks for being with us. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now. If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.